Welcome to Parents Perspective. I don't know where to turn next. Marla put her head in her hands. How many more experts can we take Brian to? Well, what did this latest expert say? Asked her friend Neela. He said Brian needs to be in a special therapeutic setting so he can have more professional help, Marla replied. What does that mean?
I'm not exactly sure, Marla grimaced, but it seems to be some kind of residential center with other kids like him.
Is it a school, like a boarding school? Neela ventured.
I think so, Marla began, but there's just so much to think about.
Her eyes filled with tears.
With all of Brian's behavior issues and now this diagnosis of a mental illness, I just feel like our whole world is falling apart.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about therapeutic placement settings for kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is fully immersed in all these kinds of problems and the placements available for support and help with such serious issues. Patricia A. Murphy is a behavioral health nurse and certified educational planner with over 25 years' experience providing for the special needs of children and young adults. Well-versed in diagnostic, psychological, medical, and educational criteria for treating at-risk youth, Patty uses this knowledge base along with frequent travel to and evaluation of schools, therapeutic programs, and facilities to recommend goodness of fit in terms of particular therapeutic interventions and school placement for each client she counsels. Patty is also the mother of four children, ages 14 to 20, all of whom have had some level of educational or emotional challenges, including dealing with divorce. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Patty.
Thank you.
How do parents know whether their child needs a therapeutic placement instead of seeing therapists and just continuing to live with the family at home?
When all aspects of a child's life are not working for them, one usually knows. When school is a problem, home is a problem, when relationships with other youngsters become a problem, that's when the parents usually know that they need something more than just having their youngster be seen by local professionals, working in therapy, mentoring, tutoring. When a professional has assessed the child who has worked with them for a period of time, when there may have been some formal assessment applied, and the treatment that one is receiving on the outside is no longer being effective for this child, then one needs to look at placement outside of the home.
It sounds like it would be so traumatic to have someone say, you're going to have to remove your child from your home.
It certainly is. And that's where one needs to refer a family to a skilled professional who has worked with this before, who understands what these schools and programs are like, in order for the family to get some comfort level of knowing that their child is going to be in a nurturing, warm, giving, caring, kind environment with trained professionals who understand psychological issues, who have worked with these issues before, and to understand educational concerns that many of these children have as well. Very difficult for a family to consider outside placement. It's also quite difficult for most of the professionals who would be recommending those programs as well.
So is this a situation where you sort of have to wait till there's a crisis? I mean, I sort of see this as a continuum. You know, first you get this kind of help, then you get that kind of help, and so forth and so on. You have to wait till there's a real crisis before you then seek an out-of-home therapeutic setting.
The preferred time to do this is not when there's a crisis. However, it can certainly be done in a crisis. And the truth is that more times than not, there is a crisis that occurs, and then the intervention is applied. In an ideal world, we would know when things are not working. We can see things falling apart at home. When parents are walking around on eggshells, when they feel as if they're prisoners in their own home, when their other children, the siblings, are starting to act out as well, it's usually a pretty good indicator that some other intervention needs to happen.
How are youngsters professionally assessed? What do people do to come up with the conclusion that this is needed or that's needed?
Many times, either young children, adolescents, or young adults have had therapy before. They've already been to a licensed clinical social worker, a clinical psychologist, an advanced practice nurse, a licensed professional counselor, or some other professional who deals with these kinds of issues. As an ongoing part of their therapy, they are constantly being assessed for the issues that they're dealing with, whether that's depression, anxiety, adoption issues, identity issues, sundry of different kind of difficulties. So there's usually an ongoing assessment that's happening while they are in treatment. In addition to that, there's formalized pen and pencil assessments that could be done, usually in the form of psychoeducational testing and or psychoemotional testing. What this does is to give you an idea of the functioning of this young person in terms of their educational issues, attention issues, distractibility concerns. Where are their strengths? Where are their weaknesses? We all have our strengths. We all have our weaknesses. What we're trying to do is to assess that and to be able to let that young person know where some of these areas of difficulty are.
What kinds of people generally do this kind of testing if parents have to have this done?
Predominantly clinical social workers who have had years of experience doing these types of testing are usually the ones who do it. In some instances, educational psychologists will also do this kind of testing. Most of the time, they have a PhD. Sometimes they are master's trained. It depends upon the intensity that one needs and the particular questions that one has when one is assessing this. If they are more educational in nature, it does not always require that one be a PhD. But by and large, it's clinical psychologists who have a PhD that do this, or neuropsychologists who have training beyond even what a clinical psychologist has.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on therapeutic placements for kids.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Patricia Murphy, psychiatric nurse and certified educational planner, about therapeutic placements for kids.
What's the difference between a residential treatment placement and a therapeutic boarding school placement? And how do these differ from boarding schools in general?
I usually explain to families when they come in that basically there are four levels of boarding schools that we could look at. One being a traditional school that may have some level of support, such as a learning center. And that would be a program that youngsters that have some attentional issues and some learning issues might be better served than at home because they would be in a structured environment. Most kids that have these kinds of concerns, they are not happy to be doing their homework in the evening. But in a boarding school, everyone does their homework. Between 7 and 9 o'clock, everyone sits down and does their homework. This is usually a good way to get those youngsters to sit down and do it too. So sometimes a boarding school for youngsters that have those kind of concerns is enough. Sometimes when there's more emotional issues that are involved, one needs to go to an emotional growth boarding school. I explain that as being a school that can handle some basic emotional issues that a young person might be going through. And just as you have a curriculum in science or math or English, we give you a curriculum in emotions, learning something about sympathy and empathy and patience, if you will, taking your turn and listening to other individuals and understanding how to build relationships. Then in an emotional growth boarding school, one usually comes in at a certain time, remains in the school for a period of time, and everybody that begins that program begins it together and ends together. That might be a 14, 16, 18-month period of time. In a therapeutic boarding school, it could also be the same, but they tend to be more individualized, and that is that in addition to having a group process, which is what works in an emotional growth boarding school, you also have individual therapy. It's usually done by those who are trained with an advanced degree and then have certain number of hours of supervisory. So going back on that, in an emotional growth boarding school, where masters prepare individuals who serve as counselors, mentors to the young people in their care. In a therapeutic boarding school, it tends to have a slightly higher level of training, more supervision of those that not only have their master's degree, but then have been working on their licensure. That is not so in every state, and one needs to look at any given state to see just how an emotional growth boarding school is looked at in that particular state, what the guidelines are, versus a therapeutic boarding school. Some states don't have an emotional growth boarding school. Some of them may resemble an emotional growth boarding school, but be called something different.
Are parents worried if they send their child to like a therapeutic boarding school, which is a more serious set of issues, obviously, that they're going to be surrounded with people who also have issues rather than models of sort of how to get better?
I have not seen a parent yet who has not had that concern.
Okay.
The answer to that is, though, that just as their youngster is going to be learning some quote-unquote tricks from some of the other youngsters who will be in treatment, their child is likely to be teaching the other some things as well. The purpose of being in a therapeutic boarding school or emotional growth boarding school, or for that matter in a residential treatment center, is some of these behaviors, emotions that this youngster has, it's really gone awry and it's wreaking a lot of havoc in that young person's life. And what really the litmus test is whether or not the youngster is really being safe. And if one is not being safe, either physically or emotionally, one needs a more advanced level of care. What happens in these programs is that, yes, there are individuals who are there who have issues that they need to deal with. But what we're hoping to do, particularly when we're looking at teenagers and young adults, is that they are in a developmental stage that now says that they really learn best when they are learning from one another. They value their peers. And if one could have a positive peer environment, usually these youngsters are able to learn in a positive way from their peers. They're going to learn some negativity and some negative behaviors, yes. However, this is in a controlled environment with professionals around who know what they're looking for and who know how to intervene when there is reason to stop some conversations or stop certain behaviors.
Patty, what about a residential treatment placement?
A residential treatment center goes beyond a therapeutic boarding school. A residential treatment center is more focused on behavioral support, medication management, and oftentimes there's some level of medical monitoring in a residential treatment center. Residential treatment centers are programs that are more focused on behaviors oftentimes, and the behaviors have escalated or the issues that the young people have are at a level that is not best served by the group process, augmented with some individual work. What residential treatment centers usually have, individual, group, and family therapy, and are usually conducted by licensed professionals, such as licensed clinical social workers, or PhDs in clinical psychology, or doctors of psychology.
What's the difference between a PhD and a doctor of psychology?
A PhD in clinical psychology has usually done more research and has come from a program that is research-based. A doctor of psychology tends to do a lot more clinical work and actual hands-on versus the clinical research.
What kinds of issues are students in therapeutic placement settings dealing with?
The groups in therapeutic placements are focused on a variety of different issues. Sometimes youngsters have anxiety issues. Sometimes they have grief and loss issues. Maybe they have lost parents. Maybe they are adopted children. Maybe they have been in foster care. The focus of a group that would be dealing with youngsters that have these concerns would be to let these other children know that they are not alone, that they are not the only ones that are dealing with these kinds of concerns. and that many of the issues that they have centered around their identity are ones that others are struggling with as well. In all of these programs, when a youngster comes into the placement, they are further assessed by the professionals at these programs to see what particular groups would be the most beneficial for them to attend. Oftentimes, these youngsters have 2, 3, 4 different groups that they go to in a given week, and they can be generalized groups of just talking about concerns that young people in their developmental stage are going through, what it's like to deal with school changes, what it's like to deal with budding relationships with members of the opposite sex, what it's like to deal with their parents, what it's like to have the birth order that they have in their own given family, etc. Particularly teenagers are not interested in sitting and listening to other people's issues that really don't concern them. So what we try to do is put these youngsters into groups that are very specific to what their given needs are.
Would you describe for us some specific kinds of therapeutic settings and what it might be like on a daily schedule there?
Again, given which kind of program a youngster might be in, programs can run from being home-based residential programs to outdoor therapeutic programs to much larger schools that resemble very small private schools. A given day will encompass school, because that's a natural developmental task that all of these youngsters are going through. They may have an individual session with a therapist. They will have groups that they will attend after their educational session, or in some instances, some schools begin later on in the day and have their groups in the morning. Every day is comprised with the youngsters following a set schedule that they will rise, do some chores, make their beds, kinds of things that they would be doing at home or what the parents would like for them to be doing at home. They will also participate in some recreational activities. And of course, the weekends are usually spent with more of those. Sometimes it means going out on expeditions. Sometimes it means experiential education trips. Sometimes the youngsters will listen to some lectures or participate in their own outside activities that they like to do. For instance, music or art, some form of drama, other kinds of generalized activities that they like to participate in. It resembles very much what a youngster would have at home, if you will, in the sense of them having a routine of going to school. The difference being that their unstructured time will now be structured for them in a therapeutic milieu.
What's the age range of students who might go into settings like you describe?
There are schools for youngsters of all ages, including those who are very young, 4, 5, 6 years old, who might have issues that center around reactive attachment disorder. Predominantly, these youngsters are teenagers. The time that the behaviors, the issues, the lack of safety becomes evident is usually when these youngsters are prepubescent or teenagers. We've seen an increase in 18 to 21, 22, 23-year-olds who have left the family home, gone on usually to some sort of an educational setting, most always to a college. And if their issues were not completely dealt with, or they were able to hide it with good grades, many times what happens is these youngsters get into college and they are not able to function socially as well as academically outside of the family home. So we do see youngsters in that age category that are also going to therapeutic placement. But by and large, it's teenagers that are in therapeutic placements.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on therapeutic placements for kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Patricia Murphy, psychiatric nurse and certified educational planner, about therapeutic placements for kids. All the different kinds of settings you're describing sound very expensive. What happens if a family can't come up with that money and the child needs that kind of help?
You are correct. Most of these programs are extremely expensive. The cost of many of these programs, beginning with boarding school, tends to begin at $35,000 a year and go upward. It's on a case-by-case basis. It's on a state-by-state basis. One could begin by looking at either their mental health system, their education system, and in some instances, unfortunately, the juvenile justice system. Those are the three primary areas that one could try to tap into for funding and resources.
Medical insurance is not involved here?
Medical insurance will pick up some, usually not the full range and the actual placement into the facility. The individual group and family therapy can be billed individually, and that can be offered to the insurance company for reimbursement.
If you could give advice to parents who are going through these kinds of difficulties with therapy and wondering what to do and so forth, what would it be?
I would say to the parent to look at the safety issue that is here with any of these children. If one is concerned about whether or not their youngster is doing harm to themselves or doing harm to those around them, they really need to rethink their current situation. What they need to do is speak with the healthcare provider that they've been working with before. If they have not been working with a healthcare provider, then they should seek out a healthcare provider and let them know. Give full disclosure. Tell them all of what is going on with this youngster. Many people are embarrassed, ashamed. If they haven't experienced these kinds of things before, they often think that they are the only family that are going through this. If they are open and they seek out other people, they will be very surprised to find that there's many youngsters that are dealing with these kinds of things. I believe that the last set of statistics that I saw told me that there was an excess of 800,000 children in the United States who are actually in some form of treatment that is residential, out of the home.
Patty, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing?
I would suggest that you look online on several different places. There are the American Psychiatric Association is one, to find some competent individuals to do assessments. That's APA.org. The National Association of Social Workers, socialworkers.org. The National Board for Certified Counselors is another. That's NBCC.org. And the Marriage and Family Therapists have an association and a website. Their website is aamft.org. If one were to look at those websites, one could find local therapists who can help them to assess whether or not their youngster needs some additional care. If they are at the point that one knows that a therapeutic placement, or one suspects and has been told by their professional counselor that they do, in fact, need a therapeutic boarding school or residential treatment or some sort of placement outside of the home, I would suggest that they contact the Independent Educational Consultants Association. You can find them online at IECAonline.org. The American Institute for Certified Educational Planners is another fine source, and that is AICEP.org.
How would someone reach you or someone like you?
One would find me at Patricia Murphy & Associates. We're located in Chevy Chase, Maryland. The phone is 301-718-7790. I would be very happy to field any phone calls if anyone wanted to call, needed a reference for anyone throughout the country, because I do travel about a week to 10 days out of every month looking at schools and programs, and attend numerous conferences where I interface with other colleagues who assessed residential treatment centers and boarding schools. I would be very happy to field any questions that anyone would have and put them in touch with professionals anywhere else in the country. There are two books that I am aware of. Interestingly enough, both of them happen to be written by the same author. And while these two books are centered around youngsters that have reactive attachment disorder, which is a severe emotional concern or disorder, I think that these two books are a good way for one to see the inner workings, if you will, of a residential program, and also what kinds of issues need to be present before we would place a youngster into a residential program. Again, this being a residential treatment center and in the most involved and most structured program. But those books are written by Vera Fahlberg, F-A-H-L-B-E-R-G, M-D. The first book is called Residential Treatment, A Tapestry of Many Therapies. The second book is A Child's Journey Through Placement. Both of these are published by Perspectives Press. And I believe that one would need to contact Forest Heights Lodge in Evergreen, Colorado at 303-674-6681 in order to obtain copies of this. I believe that it may be out of print now.
We are so glad that we were able to discuss these issues with such an experienced professional. So, Patty Murphy, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 331. Spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Also, if you can tell us what station you're tuning into, that's a help to us as well.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.